DZUP Special Features.
Our first speaker is an academician of the National Academy of Science and Technology. Is a professor of the National at the National Institute of Geologic Sciences in UP Diliman, and an international scientific expert on natural hazards. He is a geologist. He's a go-to person when it comes to disasters reduction and management. His work focuses on volcano tectonics, interdisciplinary natural hazards research, and natural disaster management. He uses his experience and expertise in geology and disaster science to serve the people, the Philippine people, by being involved in hands-on search and rescue work and forensic analysis in areas stricken by major catastrophes. Let us show our appreciation by giving him a big round of applause to the director of the UP Nationwide Operational Assessment of Hazards, or NOAA, and the executive director of the UP Resilient Institute, Dr. Alfredo Mahar Francisco A. Lagman.
Thank you, Mel. Good afternoon, everybody. I'll be talking about disasters in the ASEAN region as well as the Philippines. Just to give you a global overview of the disasters that have been hitting many countries, we can see that from the distribution of the number of events and the fatalities, most of the events that we have to be worried about are the geophysical events and the hydrometeorological events. But in terms of fatalities incurred from every hazard, the floods actually are the most dangerous because they are more frequent, although earthquakes less frequent, but when they happen, they can cause mass casualties. In the ASEAN, the percentage distribution of disasters is almost the same as the global database, wherein the floods and storms or hydrometeorological hazards are the most prevalent. But in terms of fatalities in the ASEAN, we can see that there's almost equal distribution between the hydrometeorological hazards, the floods, the storms, as well as the earthquakes and tsunamis that are generated by earthquakes. In Cambodia, floods and drought, as well as storms, dominate. In Indonesia, the floods, as well as earthquakes, are the ones that dominate. In Laos, it's the floods and storms that constitute the most number of hazards that affect the communities in Laos. And in Malaysia, it's floods and storms as well. In Myanmar, it's the same. About 75% is constituted by floods and storms. And in the Philippines, storms as well as floods. When we talk about storms, that means strong winds as well as storm surges that are generated. And this is really from the database of UNISDR, and it's a database coming all the way from 1970 to 2009. Thailand, again, floods and storms. Vietnam, floods and storms. They are actually very thankful to the Philippines because the Philippines acts as a buffer to the storms that emanate from the Pacific going westward. And before it hits Vietnam, the Philippines actually takes the brunt of all of the power of the storm. In Singapore, I think this is a very good place to live in. They only had one reported incident of an epidemic. I think this was the SARS, and they don't have problems on reported disasters due to flood, storms, and earthquakes. And I don't want to be the bearer of bad news for all of the participants here from the other countries in ASEAN. The Philippines is number one. Indonesia, sir, I apologize, you're only number two. Thailand is three. Vietnam, they're supposed to be at the top of the list, the top three, but because of the Philippines acting as a barrier to many storms headed towards Vietnam, they are only number four in the risk index. Now, the reason why the Philippines is hit by a lot of storms is because those are the storms. Storms brew from the Pacific and they go on a westward track. And the Philippines really is just along that path of typhoons. And we are also included in the Pacific Ring of Fire. It's called the Pacific Ring of Fire because around the Pacific, there are many volcanoes and earthquakes that happen. Indonesia is part of that, the Philippines is part of that, and many other places in the ASEAN region that are part of the Pacific Ring of Fire. So the Philippines is really the hotbed of disasters. But keep calm. The Philippines has got it all for you. So we've learned a lot of lessons from many disasters that have stricken the Philippines, that have hit the Philippines. Some examples, they start from 2004, Typhoon Winnie. 2005, Typhoon Kedon, Ginsaugon landslide. That was a world-class debris avalanche, 1,126 dead. Typhoon Riming, 1,399 dead. 2007, it was, an El Nino year. Typhoon Frank, 644 dead in 2008. Ondoy, Metro Manila was not spared. 2010, not that many died from the typhoons that struck the country. 2011, Pedring and Kiel floods, Sendong floods, Pablo debris flows, Yolanda storm surges, that's the famous Haiyan disaster. And then 2014, 2015, 2016, we did not really talk about any disaster. That when I talk about disasters, it's really mass casualties striking a community that is exposed and vulnerable. And then, unfortunately, last December, we had storms, consecutive storms, Urduha and Vinta, which caused many deaths in the Visayas as well as in Mindanao. Now, some examples of disasters. This is the Ginsaugon landslide. That cliff that you're seeing is 700 meters high. The planform of the landslide was roughly about three-fourths the size of the University of the Philippines campus. It was very big. For reference, for scale, you can see there the helicopter, and they were actually trying to find possible survivors from the town of Ginsaugon, which had a population of 1,857. That's the town. And when they tried to do search and rescue, they retrieved 1,226 bodies, 980 missing and presumed dead. Bodies recovered 139, identified were 56, unidentified 83, treated for injuries were 33. Died in the hospital, there were two. And they were actually trying for 6 days to rescue allegedly 400 children believed to have been trapped under the rubble. There was a text message from a teacher who said that we're here, there are 400 school children here, but they didn't know where they were because the landslide was 30 meters thick in some parts, 4 meters thick at the foot of the landslide, and the area was nearly the size of the University of the Philippines campus, so it was difficult to find the area. They tried for 6 days. There was only one survivor of that incident, found on the sixth day, a chicken 500 meters downslope from the Ginsaugon town. He was a survivor of the Ginsaugon landslide, the only one. But he died that same night when he was found. That man who's carrying him ate the chicken. There's a dish called pinikpikan, or killing me softly. I think the chicken would have wanted to die a natural death than to die that way. This is the Mayon Lahars, which killed almost 2,000 people. Characteristic of the Lahar deposits are the big boulders on top and burying a lot of communities. You can see there the big boulders. Lahars are like debris flows when they flow. It's like a rampaging flood, but instead of water, it consists of 80% water. Those are the rocks. And many towns around Mayon Volcano, Binobatan, Kamalig, Daraga, Bonga, Baspadang, and Basud were overwhelmed by the debris flows. And the reason why they were overwhelmed is because they felt secure being in a place not beside the river. They were about probably half a kilometer away from the river, but because the dikes breached upstream like this, so that's the natural course of the water flow of the river, but the dikes, they thought were solid and could withstand the lahars, broke. And when they breached upstream, it hit the community. So the dikes were all breached in all communities around Mayon Volcano. So this infrastructure really gives us sometimes a false sense of security. This is the Frank floods, a picture taken by military personnel aboard the helicopter, showing the devastation of the floodplains surrounding the river. And this reminds us that, you know, the floodplains are really not ours. Although we claim it, it's not ours. It's really part of the river. Halika na mahilig sa TCUP 1602. Tayo na mahilig sa TCUP 1602. Ikaw ako tayo sa TCUP 1602. Kasali ka.
Kaibigan, sikay na. Ha? Ma'am, classmates, sikay na! Ha? Huh? Mga kasama, sikay na! Ha?
Huh? Ako, ikaw, tayo'y isang pamayanan. Ako, ikaw, tayo'y isang pamayanan. Ako, ikaw, tayo'y isang pamayanan. Ako, ikaw, tayo'y isang pamayanan.
Sikay Kilos, sisikay na sa At Your Service tuwing Biyernes, alas 12 ng tanghali.
Ang sakit ng pusan ko, Mama. Ang sakit na po ng buong katawan ko.
Gano'ng katagal na bang hindi lumalabas, Anya?
Mag-iisang buwan na po.
Pasensya ka na, anak, ha? Naghahanap pa si Mama ng mabibilhan sa ibang bansa. Kaunting tiis pa, anak.
Si Anya ay may polycystic ovary syndrome kung saan siya'y may hormonal imbalance at isa sa mga lunas nito ay ang paggamit ng birth control pills. Make contraceptives accessible for Filipino women. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka.
Abay Juan, itikil mo na nga yung paninigarilyo mo.
Minsan-minsan lang naman to.
Isipin mo naman kami ng anak mo.
Papa, game ko na sa Sabado. Makapunta ka naman, di ba?
Oo naman, anak.
Ayon sa Civil Service Commission, 240 Pilipino ang namamatay araw-araw dulot ng paninigarilyo. Walang kasiguraduhan kung kailan ka nito maapektuhan.
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
DZUP Special Features.
And this is the Pedring and Kiel floods. It happened again during Lando and Nona in 2015. You can see that river, which was around probably 500 or 100 meters wide, and suddenly it became 10 kilometers wide. And it makes us think, seeing these pictures, if dikes can really withstand big and great floods. And then the Sendong disaster. Of course, in 2011, there was a big disaster that happened in Mindanao, and more than 1,000 people died. Almost 2,000 people died. There's this place in Mandulog. There's a town. You can see the power of the hazards. This is the Orchids Home subdivision, and when the floods came in, it was reduced to rubble. And then Haiyan. Everybody knows the story about Haiyan. Many people died because of storm surges. But 2 months before that, we had a big earthquake, and seldom do we find corresponding ground rupture similar to what you see. It's 3 meters high and 6 kilometers long. The governor of Bohol was quick to capitalize on that rare event, and he called that wall, which is 3 meters high and 6 kilometers long, the Great Wall of Bohol. So it became a tourist spot. More recently, last December, there's this map showing the vulnerability or the exposure of that community in Barangay Dalama, Tubod, Lanao del Norte. When Vinta passed and delivered a lot of rains, it generated debris flows again. And that community was overwhelmed by, again, debris flows. Now, in terms of landslide policies, there are several landmark policies that we were able to formulate here in the Philippines starting from 2004. And based on the work that we have done doing the search and rescue and forensic analysis, trying to learn the lessons from each and every disaster, we tried to identify what parts were relevant to an effective disaster risk reduction program of the country, as well as climate change adaptation. So we identify here in 2004 the National Geohazards Mapping Program, which was systematized in that year, the Hyogo Framework of Action, which we try to follow, the 2009 Climate Change Act, RA 9729, the 2010 Disaster Risk Management Act, or RA 10121. In 2011, we had the Open Government Partnership. 2012, the Nationwide Operational Assessment of Hazards, which was invested, a big investment was given to this program, about 6.4 billion pesos. And in 2014, the Geoministerial Summit stating that we have to be open in giving out our data because data about hazards transgresses through administrative boundaries. They don't recognize administrative boundaries. And then in 2014, we had the pre-disaster risk assessment of NDRRMC. This is actually included in the Sendai Framework of Action. And in 2015, we had the Sendai Framework for Disaster Risk Reduction. And again, in 2015, the General Appropriations Act, special provision on openness. And in 2016, the Philippine Open Government Partnership National Action Plan. Just last year, the Philippine Development Plan was signed by the President. This is a NEDA program. This is a program of government. It's called as the PDP 2017-2022. And in 2018, the General Appropriations Act for UPRI, getting UPRI to lead the local climate change action plans and local climate change, local LCCAP and CLUP, Comprehensive Land Use Development Plans. The summary of the key elements of policy on CCADRR is as follows. It must be an all-of-society approach. We must use probabilistic risk assessment. It must be science-based. Climate change impacts should be included in mitigation plans. PIDRA, which specifies warning, should be hazard-specific, area-focused, and time-bound. And of course, open data. Just to discuss a little bit about what probabilistic means, this really means that we cannot rely on our accounts or historical accounts. Although it's very useful in trying to engage people in communities, we must complement that with scientific knowledge because the community cannot see the hazards of the future bigger than what they've experienced. So this is a probabilistic multi-scenario hazard map. It's multi-scenario. There's a small storm surge, a bigger storm surge, a much bigger storm surge, and a high-end type storm surge. The same should be done for landslides. The same should be done for floods, small floods, bigger floods, much bigger floods. And if you combine them, you have what we call as a probabilistic multi-scenario-based multi-hazard map. For development planning, it's important that we do not use just the community knowledge, not just the historical record, because there may be disasters or hazards that can impact a community much bigger than what the people can remember or know. So this is a deterministic map. If it says that, okay, that's safe based on the community knowledge, you put the people there or develop there. But with a probabilistic scenario, a small type of flood, a bigger type of flood, and a much bigger type of flood, sometimes including the climate change impacts, you will see right away that putting an evacuation center there is not good. So it's important that we have several scenarios to depict what can happen or what can strike a community. And the only way by which we can do that is to use science, to be able to use the latest technologies, like, for example, LIDAR, detailing the ground in as much resolution as possible so that you can use the physics or the knowledge and the physics of the flow of water or the physics of stability of rocks to be able to recreate these scenarios. And it's not just the scenario derived from the historical record, but also scenarios of the future. And when you make plans for communities, it must cut across sectors: agriculture, coastal, water, health, forestry. And if you develop communities using this kind of method, we actually are solving the problem of disaster risk, because development is known to be a manifestation of unresolved problems of development. We have to prepare also for climate change. So this is the scenario. We can see that there's an increasing number of reports for hazards. Earthquakes, more or less the same, but the meteorological hazards have been increasing. Is this related to climate change? In the ASEAN region, there have been 637 climate-related disasters, 200 million affected people, death toll of 173,519, and an economic loss of about $8 trillion. And in terms of predictions, those that have been happening only once every 100 years have been reduced, have become more frequent. One every 100 years become 5 to 20-year rain return hazards. And of course, we need to prepare for that. We need to prepare for the hazards of the future. For example, if you look at this graph, the black curve at the bottom is the baseline. That's the historical record. All other curves on top are climate change projections. So if you have, for a certain area, 280 millimeters of rain, with climate change, it becomes more frequent. To instead of 100-year return, it becomes a 12.5-year rain return. And if you project that upward, instead of 280 millimeters, that becomes 400 millimeters. But of course, you cannot give that information to the municipal planner or the mayor, because knowing that change in rainfall does not mean anything in terms of planning. Somebody must translate that. And these are the scientists who will try to transform that knowledge of rainfall into a hazard map like this, which will be used for development planning, and where you can see the sites that are safe and the sites that are not safe. So we have here a map. We try to use digital technology to incorporate everything that has been shown in terms of landmark policies. It's not appearing. I guess it's good because I don't have time anymore. But I invite everyone, I encourage everyone to please visit the UP Resilience Institute website, where you can be linked to the digital platform for everything that I've just talked about. In essence, we want science to be incorporated in our efforts for climate change adaptation and disaster risk reduction. Science must be, at first, interdisciplinary. You cannot just work alone. For example, we cannot just work with engineers. We must work with other groups as well. Science and the humanities, as well as the arts, the social sciences, is very important, because we cannot assume that people will embrace the science. We need psychologists, anthropologists, sociologists, artists, musicians to get the people to understand what the engineers and scientists are saying. It must be transdisciplinary as well. The LGUs, the NGOs, the NGAs, the INGOs, the stakeholders, the crowd must be part of the effort for CCADRR. And all of these can only work if we have open data, open science, open knowledge. We must share. We must have open access. Because if we don't build trust, we cannot communicate. If we don't have open data, we cannot share the problem and be able to solve the disaster that we face in the future. Thank you very much.
Halika na makinig sa DZUP 1602. Tayo na makinig sa DZUP 1602. Ikaw ang bota tayo sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka.
Nais niyo bang dali ng kalikasan sa siyudad?
Bakit hindi na?
nating subukan.
Inihahatid ng DZUP 1602 ang isang programang magpapalapit sa inyo sa kalikasan.
Nature Venture! Isang oras ng paghatid sa inyo ng mga kwento at kaalaman tungkol sa kalikasan.
Makinig na para sa environment-friendly at nature-loving na pamumuhay.
Nature Venture! Tuwing Lunes, alauna hanggang alas dos ng hapon, dito lang sa DZUP 1602.
Kasali ka!
Ano ba yan? Mga Pilipino talaga, di marunong sumunod, oh!
Ang daming basura sa daan! Pinoy talaga kung san-san lang nagtatapon.
Hay nako, Pinoy talaga, oh! Singit ng singit!
Bakit nga ba ginagamit ang mga salitang ito para bigyan ng masamang kulay ang pagiging Pilipino? Bigyan nating halaga ang salitang Pilipino. Bahagi ito ng pangangalaga sa ating pagkatao.
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
Lolo, di ba nang tapos kayo sa UP 50 years ago?
Oo, apo! Taong 2017.
Ano pong itsura ng UP noon?
Madami pang puno at damuhan. Puro luntian.
Talaga po? Wow! Ngayon, puro gusali at aspalto na lang.
Ang UP ay oasis sa gitna ng lungsod. Gawin ang tungkulin nating alagaan ng kalikasan. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
DZUP Special Features.
Our speaker was assigned as an interim welfare advisor in Vietnam Red Cross and helped the Vietnam Red Cross set up its social services department in 1995. 3 years later, she was invited to be a roster member of the International Federation of Red Cross Reference Center on Psychosocial Support, where he was tasked to conduct and act as facilitator in various psychological support trainings in Southeast Asia. In 2004, she was invited by the IFRC Regional Office in Bangkok to be part of the assessment team after the tsunami. Eventually, she was employed by the International Federation of Red Cross as the Regional Psychosocial Support Delegate for Southeast Asia. And then they promote to promote and build the capacity of Red Cross national societies and to implement a long-term psychological support program in the Southeast Asian region covering the countries, the 10 countries and East Timor. Please extend a warm welcome to the National Head of the Social Welfare Department of the Philippine Red Cross, Dr. Sinaida P. Beltejar.
Good afternoon to everyone. Thank you very much, Sir Mel, my mentor, when I took my doctoral degree in social development. I will be very happy to share with you our role in the Red Cross in providing psychosocial support. My presentation will be two parts. First, introducing psychosocial support as part of disaster response, and second, the case study that I prepared. This is actually my dissertation. It's a good thing Dr. Lagman gave us some background about the and the profile about the disaster in ASEAN region. And just to show the risk, by merely looking at the location of our region, we are very vulnerable because we are located between two oceans, and we are actually at high risk in terms of typhoons, flooding, and tsunami. And it is we are also located between several tectonic plates with high risk of earthquake, volcanic eruption, and tsunami. Actually, in 2004, I was asked by the International Red Cross to be part of the assessment during the tsunami. I was based in Bangkok for 2 years, and I had to cover the different countries in providing psychosocial support, not only in Bangkok, but in other affected areas like Banda Aceh, and also in Yogyakarta, in Malaysia, and some other parts of the region. If you will look at this in the region, it is very obvious that we have buffet of disaster. I do not know if we are happy about that, but they say, name it, we have it. Where can you find trust slide? In Payatas, I remember we had that response team helping those that were affected by this trust slide in Payatas. We also have a lot of disaster. It's now becoming mega disaster. I have been with the Red Cross for more than 4 decades. And you will see that in every disaster, there will be different reactions. The tendency of some service provider, they provide services addressing the physical needs, providing relief, giving them some kind of assistance like shelter, food, clothing. But they don't realize that there are different reactions. Here you will see that people who are confronted with crisis situations, especially disaster or other emergency, they do suffer psychologically, emotionally, behaviorally, and there will be different reactions. So here you will see the crisis reactions like fear, grief, anger. They're confused, there is disbelief, they are shocked. And the first thing that we have to provide is psychological first aid to be able to help them to cope with the situation. And by so, we have to provide or address the basic needs, okay? We also look at the coping mechanism of the people who are affected by disaster and help them to be able to bounce back so that they will be able to maintain their equilibrium or balance. The central theme of disaster actually is loss of properties, loss of livelihood, loss of loved ones, loss of dignity. Why loss of dignity? Because people who are in the evacuation center will have to queue just to get their next meal. And all these losses have to be restored. We have to be aware of what are the losses so that we know already what do we need to give back or to restore. And here you will see a person, even if you provide food, the question is, will she be able to eat? You can give food, but you cannot give the appetite to it. You can give blankets, you can give beddings, but you cannot give sleep. So you will see just by looking at the affect of the person, she is psychologically, emotionally affected by the critical event. So we have to look at the hidden wounds, hidden because we cannot see it. When you are bleeding, for example, in the Red Cross, we have been trained that to stop bleeding, if you have a wound, you just put pressure, put some band-aids so that the bleeding will stop. If your heart is bleeding, how will you stop that pain? Because you lost somebody who is very significant, family members, because of disaster. So there are hidden wounds that have to be addressed. So in the Red Cross, we have what we call community-based psychosocial support. And this is a process of facilitating resilience within individuals, families, and communities. And of course, coupled with this, we have to respect the independence, dignity, and coping mechanism of individuals and communities. We know that every nation have different ways of coping. We have to respect the kind of system that we have. I remember when I was in Yogyakarta, there was this earthquake, and our Red Crescent there said that we have to provide assistance. And then I gave a form to make assessment. And then after a day, they said that they cannot get the real result of the assessment because we used the UN form, which is Western. And then I said, okay, why don't we get and mobilize the academic people from Indonesian university and also get some leaders from the community and come up with your own assessment form, which became now a tool. We just had to validate it, and it became linguistically, culturally appropriate assessment form. Sometimes it's not advisable to just borrow some Western tools because there are times that we have to indigenize our approaches. Now, there are several principles in doing community-based psychosocial support. Community-based means you have to bring the services down to the community, help them cope with the situation to mitigate the impact of the event or the critical event. We have to make use of volunteers. Volunteers are part of the community, and they know what is the culture, the values, the lifestyle in the community. They know the people. That's why we can tie it up with community participation. We have to make sure that when we do psychosocial support, we mobilize people who are within the community because they know each other. Empowerment, we don't empower them. They empower themselves. We just facilitate the empowerment so that we will be able to look at their strength and capitalize on that so that we will be able to enhance the social functioning of these people. Early intervention, when we do psychosocial support, one principle is we have to do it at the onset or within 72 hours. It cannot wait. Time is of the essence. So we have to provide and extend psychosocial support as much as possible at the onset. And if you are to provide intervention, it should be viable. So what is psychosocial support? It refers to the actions. We have to address the psychological and the social needs of the individuals who are affected by disaster. And this is based on the principle that most of the stress that are being manifested by those who are affected can be addressed by just giving them psychological first aid.
Halika na pakinig sa DZUP 1602. Tayo na pakinig sa DZUP 1602. Ikaw ang bota tayo sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka.
Ito na ang programang kukumpleto sa Webes nyo.
Union!
Tampok ang mga boses, kwento at talento ng ating mga kawani, reps at mga guro ng bayan.
Union!
Tara na at pakinsa sa usapan para sa isang pamantasan at bansang masaya, masigla, malaya, makamamamayan at makabayan. Para sa isang tatak unyo na usapan, Union! Tuwing Huwebes, alauna hanggang alas dos ng hapon, dito lang sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
Anak, mabilis na lang to. Ilalagay ko na lang sa baon mo.
Ma, late na ako. Bibilhin na lang ako ng kape. Hapunan na lang, Ma, okay?
Pahalagahan ang mga bagay na ginagawa ng ibang tao para sa'yo. Kahit na ito'y kasing simple lang ng almusal ni nanay. Isang paalala ng DZUP 1602. Magandang umaga.
One iced coffee for Pam?
Huwag na po yung straw. Salamat.
Kanina pa ako nauuhaw eh. Bili ako ng tubig, ikaw?
Di na, may baonan ako.
Prepared ah. At tipid pa.
Taon-taon, 8 milyong toneladang basura ang napupunta sa karagatan. Ang pagbabago ay nagsisimula sa'yo. Iwasan ang paggamit ng disposable plastic na nakasasama sa kapaligiran. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka.
Countdown to D-Day. T-minus 8 hours and 20 minutes.
Huh, 8 oras na lang! 10 chapters pa kailangan kong i-review!
So, nang aking buhay!
Pahingi naman ng konting peace and quiet! Pwede!
Okay lang maging expressive, pero kaibigan, isipin din ang kapakanan ng iba. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Ito ay pag-ibig.
Ma, I love you po.
Mahal na mahal din kita, anak.
Ito ay pag-ibig.
Panatang makabayan, iniibig ko ang Pilipinas, aking lupang sinilangan.
Ito ay pag-ibig.
Pare, mahal kita.
Pantay-pantay ang lahat sa pag-ibig. LGBTQ, babae o lalaki, lahat ay may karapatang mamuhay at magmahal. Don't discriminate. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 16.
Ay naku, tama yan. I-push mo yan. Push lang ng push.
Go, go, go! Final push!
Ray!
Excuse you!
Maganda yung pang-motivate sa paggawa, pero hindi sa pila. Imbis na ulo ang painitin, pasensya at pang-unawa ang pairalin. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Uy! Kaldereta! Baksiw! Sisig! Chopsuy! At dahing na bamus! Busog na ako, pero ang dami ko pagtira.
Huwag maging takaw tingin dahil sayang ang pagkain. Siguraduhin na ang laman ng plato ay yung wasto lamang.
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Mahirap kalaban ang heart disease. Ayon sa World Health Organization, 12 milyong katao ang namamatay kada taon sa buong mundo dahil dito.
Alam nyo ba na maraming uri ng heart disease? Kabilang dito ang high blood pressure, coronary heart disease, at rheumatic fevers.
Kung ikaw ay mayroong heart disease, hindi pa huli ang lahat. Kumain ng wastong pagkain, itigil ang paninigarilyo, at mag-ehersisyo. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Anak, paki-on nga yung bago nating plasma TV.
Dad, maglalago muna ako ng PS2 sa kwarto niyo ni Mami, ha? Buksan ko na din yung aircon.
Wait, kuya. Can I use your sound system sa room mo?
Yaya, paki-plug in mo nga yung oven.
Yaya, paki-on daw yung mga aircon sa mga kwarto.
Oh, ayan. Wala ng kuryente. May say ka pa kaya? Gamitin sa wastong paraan enerhiyang ating kailangan. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Isang araw, di pa uwi na nga ako. Pagkabukas ko ng pinto, wala na akong ibang nakita. Hindi ang mga kamay niya na tumatama sa mukha ko. Wala na akong ibang naririnig, kundi ang iyak ng mga anak ko. Wala na akong ibang hinihiling, kundi matapos na ang lahat ng to.
Itigil ang pang-aabuso sa mga kababaihan. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
DZUP Special Features.
So what is psychological first aid? This is the key element is by being there, attending to the here and now situation, active listening, stay close, accept feelings, we provide general care, and make sure that information is provided. People who are in critical situation, they are hungry for information. They want to know, were you able to find the lost family members? Were you able to locate those who are missing? Especially if their family were very close to you. So these are some of the principles. We have to reunite family members. That's why in the Red Cross, we have what we call Restoring Family Links. Restoring Family Links is a service where we try to do tracing, locate missing person so that we will be able to reunite them. No amount of psychosocial support will work if family members are disintegrated. This is a pyramid prepared by the Interagency Standing Committee of UN on mental health and psychosocial support. It is saying that in the first level, we have to address the basic needs. That is the roof above the head, above the food and everything. Strengthening the community and family support. And the third layer is saying that we have to address the specialized support, especially those who are predisposed. Prior to disaster, they have been exposed to some kind of critical situation already. Specialized services is also at the last or at the tip of the pyramid, which says we have to address that through referral, and this is usually being addressed by those who are clinically train people. Just to show one example, if you are in the evacuation center, in tier 1, if you have 100 people in the evacuation center, 70 of those will be able to bounce back. Just provide them with the basic services that they need. Hot meals, psychological support tracing, other services that they need. And then the second layer, tier 2, these are those who are at risk. 20% of them or 20 out of 100 will be needing some counseling. Predisposed din yan. Those who have been injured, yung mga namatayan, those who have other needs, those who lost properties, those who lost their houses. And the last layer, this is 10 out of the 100 will be needing some kind of attention coming from the psychologist, the psychiatrist, and we do referral if that is the case. So looking at the paper that I have prepared, my case study is about Typhoon Haiyan. This was during the Typhoon Haiyan that hit the Philippines in 2013. 26 provinces were affected, and the specific place that I covered was Tacloban. The impact of disaster, there were 16 million that were affected, 1.14 million houses that were damaged, 6,300 reported deaths, and 1,061 people still missing up to now. At that time, I remember we received 103,000 cases for tracing. There were a lot of displacement and a lot of missing person because of that disaster. So if you will look at the, we don't look at the affected population or the affected person, we look at the workers. You will see that the way they help, they have to rescue, they have to search, they have to look for people who have been reported missing, those who are victims of disaster. We also need to look at the different reactions. For example, this one, she is looking for her daughter that was actually missing. So, different reaction. Humanitarian workers are exposed to body retrieval, management of the dead and the missing. And if you will look at this slide, those who are, you can see the body bags. The humanitarian workers of the Red Cross retrieved 2,668 dead bodies. And can you imagine the kind of work that they had to do? So my study focused on this. I tried to determine the vulnerability of the humanitarian workers, to look into their profile and to look at their coping mechanism. In terms of personal coping mechanism, self-care, peer support, and spiritual coping mechanism. And also to determine the capacity of the Red Cross on how it does it provide psychosocial support to humanitarian workers and to recommend policies. So for the conceptual framework, I used the capability approach by Amartya Sen, which I adopted. It is a development paradigm that builds on human capabilities through investment in people and use them fully for growth so they can be agents of their own lives, and the process of development that creates an environment for people to develop their full potential and the choice to be educated, to live a long and healthy life, and to have access to resources for a decent standard of living. Okay, this is the operational framework. I will discuss this one. I just used the IPO, the Input Process Output framework. And the research methodology actually is quantitative, and I conducted survey to 75 respondents. It is also a mixed method using qualitative. Interviews were done. Focus group discussion and case study analysis was also done. The research instrument was used. The study used a semi-structured interview. I had to gather data about the information, the profile of the humanitarian workers, the condition and the extent of difficulty, the coping system, and the extent of the support being provided by the agency. So for the analysis of data, the descriptive statistics such as frequency counts transmitted to percentages was used to present the profile of the humanitarian workers. The Likert scale was used also to interpret the questionnaire. The respondents were also asked to rate the extent of difficulty. And for the extent of difficulty, we use stress level positively framed question. And the average weighted mean was also applied. So for the findings, I'll just enumerate this one. The data revealed that most of those workers that were mobilized were very young. They were male, gender. We had to mobilize those who are coming from the chapters nearby because most of those volunteers that we have at the Red Cross are also, they were also affected. So the backup chapters, like in the Visayas, other not in Region 8, but in Mindanao, and also coming from the north, were mobilized. And most of them were male workers. And this study concludes that the research respondents experienced great difficulty. The trend shows that the bulkiest workloads were done by the first aider, those who did search and rescue. And most of the humanitarian workers were multitasking. They were wearing several hats. They had to do first aid, search and rescue, provide hot meals, provide relief, all at the same time. And the deployment period was actually very long. It's 150 days, almost 5 months, because we ran out of volunteers who were trained at that particular time because it was a mega disaster. So as a conclusion, it can be concluded that from their profile alone, the humanitarian workers were vulnerable to the effects of disaster. The respondents were also serving several assignments. They were engaged in a multitasking mode. And I believe, as a researcher, that these humanitarian workers were exposed to secondary trauma as exhibited by their different reactions, psychological, emotional, and behavioral reactions. So for the recommendation, it is recommended that as we provide services, psychosocial support to the affected population, we realize because of this study, we have to extend it to the humanitarian workers. We believe that as we alleviate human suffering, we should realize that we are not killing our own people. So with that, I'd like to say that now the Red Cross has extended psychosocial. There is a policy in place because of this study that we have to extend psychosocial support not only to affected population, but also to humanitarian workers. For me, I believe that charity should begin at home. So thank you very much for listening. Let's continue our heart beating for humanity.